Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Reckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, March 1st, 2013. Carla L. Reckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit their websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number four, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Reckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hi, Carla and Jim. How are you doing today?
Hey.
Doing well.
Doing all right.
All right.
Sitting
still
on pins and needles, Monica.
Still
just
no
waiting,
news about... Oh, dear.
Don't know about the operation yet. No, everything's in line. I've spoken with the office, and they informed me that they had gotten a note that they needed. I was okay for surgery, and I was in queue for getting a spot, and they let me know when my turn came. And that's been most of a week, and I haven't heard a thing. And so, you know, it's just like waiting and waiting, and it was supposed to be a week ago that I actually had the operation. So it feels longer than it did before then, because everything was focused to that moment, you know, and we were really, I know a lot of absent healers were really focused on that too. And when it didn't work out, that, you know, and I had to get extra tests, the energies had to be reformed, and they can't really be focused again until we have a time. Although, you know, I suppose if you were really, really sophisticated, you could focus them for whenever the time was, because, of course, all times are one. But I'm not that sophisticated. Far from it. So everything going pretty well in your world?
Yeah, doing good. Yeah. We finally got all our dental work done, so that's behind us. That's a relief. So now I'm all into planting my spring garden, so...
I must say, it's just so, such a joy when things that you planted, Jim planted, I guess, I don't know how many hundreds of bulbs.
Probably about 1,000 altogether.
Uh-huh, but,
wow.
You know, to see it was mostly tulips, but there's these early sort of bluebells that are coming up in the wooded area. They're a wooded flower, you know, they need shade. So Jim planted them all over, and he said he just about planted the whole area. So hopefully it will just turn to carpet of blue. That's my hope.
All right.
Hard on that.
Well, I'll give you something nice to look out the window and see
all
those beautiful flowers.
Yeah, what did you plant?
Well,
what are you planning to plant?
Vegetable garden, you know, I just
planted my
cucumbers and cantaloupes and honeydew melons and carrots and onions and tomatoes and squash and stuff like that.
especially for vegetarians. Mm-hmm. Having fresh vegetables is just the bee's knees.
Yeah, absolutely. And some greens, you know. And But we got some fruit trees flowering, so we'll see if they do anything, though. It remains to be seen. But yeah, we didn't have any winter this year, so don't know if it even got cold enough for them to even set any fruit, but I hope they do. Okay.
Oh, well,
yeah. Okay, I'm going to go to our opening riff, and this is from Kuo from November 16th, 1986. Forgive and forgive again. Forgive yourself. Forgive any who seem to have hurt you, remembering that you have faulty perceptions if you do not see love in every situation. You have the power to create children of your thoughts, daughters and sons of your heart, by what you say and how open your heart and hands are. We ask you to create love. Love one another, my children. Always do what you must, with no excuses and no need for recrimination, and always turn your face forward and use what you have learned. This environment, which we have called third density, is a gift. Every tear, every ache of the heart is precious. We hope you can give thanksgiving in the hard times and find joy in tears. For truly enough, there is sadness in any joy within the illusion. Should there not also be joy in any sadness?
Thank you, Monica. I just really, when I ran into that, I just thought that was something I wanted to share with people. Let's see. Well, I guess I'd start talking about this from the standpoint of what a ghost is. When you have a ghost, usually what happens is that the person was so focused on something in life that when the time came to depart in the spirit body, the electrical body, and leave all of these thoughts behind for a whole new life, the person was still so focused that they left behind, as we all do, our personality. But this personality was focused on a certain thing. And unfortunately, with ghosts, that certain thing is almost never positive. It's almost always something that they're concerned about, they're worried about, they're angry about. They're jealous of somebody or something. Some negative emotion has caused them to be unable to make a clean getaway. Let's put it that way. And it's so unfortunate that you hardly ever hear of a ghost that is full of love and full of joy and full of sunshine, and the people are glad to get the ghost. Usually there's sorrow there. There's sorrow because they're aching for somebody that they can't have. Or I had a ghost in my life when I was 25 and moved together with Don Elkins to make a life with him. I moved into a two-bedroom apartment, and this ghost came to me in between waking and sleeping in the hypnagogic state. And I really felt that presence and that concern and that nervousness. And after a little while for me to get over the shock of actually feeling another presence there and realizing I had a ghost, I finally got it together to ask the ghost what it was she was so concerned about. And she was able to impart to me that she was concerned about somebody close to her. So I went to the neighbors, some of whom had lived there for quite some time. And mine was an apartment house, but it was in a neighborhood of houses. And the people next door had known her, the lady that lived in my apartment, for many years. And what she was concerned about was her son. Her son had stolen something or done something that was felonious, but it wasn't beyond a certain point. It was a minor felony, not a an assault with a weapon or anything like that, but he had done something that was wrong, and he had been sent to prison for juveniles, whatever that's called. And while he was in there, she died, and she didn't know what happened to him. So I asked and found out that he had gotten out of juvenile detention, and he was, as far as they knew, okay. So I went back, and the next time that she approached me, I told her that. And she seemed to be comforted by that to an extent, but she didn't leave me alone completely. Ultimately, the person that made that ghost go away was Don. Don was always defended. He grew up in Mayfield, Kentucky, and in little towns in Kentucky, you know, the gift they give the 13-year-old boy tends to be a rifle for hunting squirrels. You know, I mean, he was a dead-eye shot, and he always was heavily defended, and that was just the way he was, and that's the way people are in the wilds of Kentucky. The stories are true. Anyway, he just took a gun out, and he left it on the bed, and she never bothered us again after that. So anyway, ghosts, okay, and they never really seem to be pleasant or to be happy. Well, it says here, you have children of your thoughts, daughters and sons of your heart, by what you say and how open your heart and hands are. And if you think about it, anything that you focus on long enough and hard enough is going to become a thought form. You're going to make it real in the sense that in the world of time-space, it becomes real. What do you want to make real? What do you want to focus on to the extent that you make this real? You know, I've always hoped that my devotion to Jesus and to the one infinite creator would mean that I was simply pouring my heart into a thought form that had existed for millennia and will undoubtedly exist as long as there are those on this earth who talk about Jesus. I'm a typical devoted Christian and hope that I can serve in my life. So, you know, that would be my personal hope, that if I left something behind, it would be that devotion. But, of course, I'm also devoted to L&L Research, to the work that we've done. I really don't know where L&L Research ends and I begin. It's hard to say because, you know, we started this thing in 62 when I was in college, and I'm almost 70. It's like a half a century of being involved with meditation and these messages of unconditional love and thinking as the Creator thinks and having vibrations as the Creator vibrates and getting closer and closer and closer to conforming to that one great original thought or logos of love, that unconditional love that made us and made all of the worlds that are. So how do you do that? Well, you know, there are hints in any settled religion. If you look at the holy works of any settled religion, you get hints as to how to do it. I'm familiar with Christianity, so I can talk about Jesus' suggestions. You know, he suggested that we love each other, that we would serve the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself. So every time I look at my husband, I'm looking at myself. Do I treat him as well as I would like to be treated, as well as I hope to be treated? I hope so. What do you think, Mick? How am I doing?
Doing pretty well,
Mick. Oh, good. You know, and you start looking at your relationships in general. Do I treat each person with that awareness, that intimate awareness that this is a soul, this is a wonderful, valuable soul that is a self, you know, like myself, and we are all part of the Creator. I mean, how successful am I really at that? I don't know what my score is. It doesn't really matter. You can't keep score. because you'll always get it wrong. We always perceive things wrongly. But the truth of it is, no matter how beautiful and wonderful the relationship might be, there will come a time when there are words between you, misunderstandings they may be, but nevertheless, there they are. And it's like a brick wall between you unless you go to take those bricks down. And how do they come down? They don't come down because you hammer out an agreement. They come down because you forgive each other. Forgiveness, Ra said, stops the wheels of karma. It's the only thing that stops the wheels of karma. All the logic in the world's not going to keep you from having to work out the, you know, adhering karma. Maybe you came into this life with it. Maybe you developed the karma within this incarnation. Whatever it is, if you feel that you have it, if you feel that you see it in your relationships, you know what you have to do, according to those of Ra. Forgive. Forgive and forgive again. Now, the person, and I've said this before, that we often forget to forgive the most is ourselves. We can really work hard at forgiving the other guy. We can see his point of view. We can see, oh, that poor guy, you know, he has had so many difficulties in his life. And here, am I going to give him a hard time? No, I'm not. I totally understand why he fell into that. And I'm going to forgive him. It's just like it never happened. It's gone because he doesn't need this on top of everything else in his life. And we forgive that person. But do we say that about ourselves? Usually not. Usually we're hard on ourselves and we're asking ourselves again and again, what could we have done better? Why couldn't we have done that in a better way? What was a better way? You know, we're looking not to forgive ourselves and let it go, but it's almost like we're holding this problem to us and we don't seem to want to let it go. We seem to want to keep it and toy with it, and it's not doing us any good that way. We don't move forward that way. You move forward by releasing yourself from karma. And how do you do that? You forgive. It's a wonderful thing to be forgiven. It feels so good. And you can feel it when somebody really forgives you. But have you felt that from yourself recently? Spend some time going over those things that you hold against yourself and systematically affirm that you forgive yourself. And you can even tell yourself, get off my back. Just go away, get off my back, get off my back, get out of here. Because we need sometimes to speak firmly with ourselves because it really takes a lot to get our attention. We're so sure that we've, you know, been unworthy and we've done something wrong and we're not forgiving. So, as the Kuo says, love one another. But they also say this, which I thought was striking. Do what you must with no excuses. If you have to do it, do it. If you have to make a boundary between yourself and someone else, do it. You do, after all, have to live this life and, you know, feel free and feel safe and feel good about things. Boundaries sometimes need to be made, and I have made many in my time. It's really important sometimes to make them. I remember a colleague one time, I sat down, I actually wrote him a personal letter. I said, "Dear so-and-so, how do you do? My name is Carla. I love the law of one, and I know you do too. And since we're both working to serve the law of one as best we can, I just thought it would be nice for me to introduce myself to you and let you know that anything that I can do to help you in a professional way, I'd be glad to do." the person had a long-standing personal relationship with me, which I ended. I was done. But I wasn't wanting to kick the person out of my heart. I just needed to make a boundary between myself and that person, because otherwise that person would have continued very difficult behaviors to deal with. And it would have taken me a lot of time that I didn't have to spend on that. And it would have hurt me every day. So boundaries are good to make. You know, don't make excuses. Just do what you have to. And do it with gentleness and with honesty and with happiness in your heart, with love in your heart, because you know that this is necessary for you both to make a distance between. Turn your face forward, it says, and use what you have learned. Isn't that wonderful advice? To look to the future, to think about what we've learned and use it. Not to beat ourselves up with it, but to see patterns, and when they come around again, be better at dealing with them. Be more skillful in the way that you deal with people. Be more fearless and more able to get into your heart and stay there. I hope I'm listening to this advice. It's not bad. They end by saying, we hope you can give thanksgiving for the hard times. And you know, I really do. I think that the hard times in my life have formed me, have determined, have made me more and more determined to turn my face to the Creator, to turn my face to love, to turn my face to service. And perhaps if I hadn't been tested, I would not know what it was to make that kind of deep commitment of myself now and in the future. When I say every morning in my prayers, I give myself to you this day. This is your day. Let me be your servant today. That's my highest desire. Certainly I'm talking to the Holy Spirit. Certainly I'm talking to friends beyond this illusion. But it lifts me up. I know whose day it is, and I know whose I am. And with an example like Jesus the Christ, I don't have to ask myself too much about what would Jesus do. He would look for the love in the moment. That's what he would do. That's what he did in every parable. You can see him doing it. I hope we can all look for the love in the moment. And I am so grateful that this opportunity is here today for me to talk about that love and share it with you. I love you, everybody.
Thank you, Carla. And we all love you, too. Absolutely. Jim, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Oh, a little short thing. I think it's quite a revelation when we discover that we really do have the power to transform almost magically any situation that we might share with another person just by looking for the love in the moment and attempting to develop some real love for a person that maybe we've had a difficulty with. That when that happens and you begin to share love with a person like that, I think it's a shock to the other person to discover that there is somebody in the world that is after a higher principle with them, that they are a partner in this effort to find and live by a higher principle, that this just doesn't happen very often. And when it does, I think it's remarkable. And I think people truly are moved by such an attempt at opening the heart and being honest in the sharing of love. And it really can transform people. And the first one, of course, that it transforms is you. You're the one that really feels the power of your own magic. So this is a way that we can identify that power within ourselves and begin to share it with others. It's you know, the Creator's loving energy really does move through us in moments like that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go to the first question, which is from Jeremy. And Jeremy says, Carla and Jim, could you please comment on the efficacy of conscious channeling as opposed to the trance-level channeling in regards to the purity of the material provided? Since the conscious channeling seems to have a higher chance of information being from the instrument's own mind, how accurate, or should I say how pure, is the material that is being channeled in regards to the information truly originating from the entities being channeled?
Want me to start with that? Okay. Well, I would answer that in two parts. The first part is that everything depends on what the instrument does before she accepts a source. If the instrument is careless, then the source's vibration is at best the same vibration as that person is in waking conscious life. At worst, the person has hooked up with a negatively polarized entity and doesn't even know it. And it's not trustworthy at all. Whereas, if a person who wants to be an instrument comes to it with the intention of doing her highest and best, she begins by tuning herself. And she tunes herself very carefully, just as high as she can hold it, not beyond the point where she can vibrate honestly and hold that vibration. But when she is at that vibration, then she asks who comes, you know, in the name of what I hold the dearest. I always ask for who comes in the name of Jesus Christ and his message of love. And I will get an answer. Say it's Kuo. It always has been for the last 20 at least years. Okay, I challenge that entity because anybody can use a name. So I challenge, I say, do you come in the name of Jesus Christ? Can you say Jesus is Lord? Now everybody would have to challenge differently depending on what they held highest and best. This happens to be mine. And if they could not meet that, they would just fall away. Basically, the spirit would go away. And I've had many a spirit fail to meet a challenge. It works. It works well. Just to make sure, I do the challenging process 3 times, you know, just to be sure that I'm not having an off day. You know? No, even twice, you know, I do it that 3rd time. And so at that point, I moved to the group. I've tried to bring people to the group that are vibrating as highly as possible. You have less control over that by a long shot, but you have some. And then I try to tune the group. We all try to tune together by listening to music, by chanting together, by whatever it is that we've decided to do before we begin the channeling process. So tuning the self, challenging the spirit, and then tuning the group creates the best environment for a message, whether it's a conscious channeled message or whether it is a trance channeled message. Okay, that's the first part. It's what you have control over. Now, what you don't have control over in trance channeling is just about anything. I mean, you give up every bit of control if you're in a trance, if you're asleep. I did that during the Law of One, and you can see the difference between my trance channeling and my conscious channeling just by reading the material. I mean, if you read a page of the Law of One, and then you read a page of a Kuo channeling, you're going to see two completely different styles of speech. One of them sounds like a person, but a person that's really inspirited. The other one sounds like a spirit, not particularly human, and certainly not from around here. And that's true in ways that I don't think one could ever fake. So there's more purity of information if you want to talk about purity in terms of accuracy. If you go to trance work, then going to channeled work that's done consciously. It is to be remembered that people can always say that they're trance channeling when they're not. People can say just about anything, and we don't have the capacity yet as a culture, we don't have the instrumentation to test them and to know whether or not they are actually in, you know, in the sleep stage and don't have anything to do with what's going on, or if, you know, they're very conscious and making the thing up as they go along. Now, I have been studied by a nurse who sat with me in 2005 at a channeling, and she said that my pulse and my blood pressure changed the instant before I began channeling. And the instant after I stopped channeling, my blood pressure and pulse changed back. Don't see how you could fake that. So there is a difference between the channeled self, the channeling self, and the non-channeling self as far as what's happening in the body. But to take a good look at what's happening when you channel consciously, the Confederation entities have told us time and again that they like working with conscious channeling because they are able to use the stories that we have, the things that have happened to us, the examples that come out when they're trying to illustrate a point. They have access to the things that we think about, and the reason they have access to that is that they throw a concept at the instrument. And the concept is very dense. You know, if you stop to pick it apart all the way, you would never get another concept. It's really done on the run. You're getting a ball of concept. You're doing the best you can to translate it into English. And it's very helpful to them as well as to the instrument for the instrument to tell, to share her experiences to a certain extent. And they said between, I don't know, 10% and 30%, it's good to have the content be that of the person. But it's always, you know, told as that of the person. You know, this instrument remembers, or this instrument had a, you know, occasion when. It's not good to pass that off as good information from beyond. It's just a story to illustrate a point. But still, I think that the difference between myself as just a speaker like I am now and myself as an instrument is quite obvious. If you listen to the channeling, it's, the speech pattern is different. There's a calm there. There's one is in a zone, and the stuff simply rolls out until they stop giving you the concepts, and you're just done, you know. But until you're done, you're pretty much entrained to that vibration, which is picking up those concept balls, those very thickly, densely woven balls of concept. So you are getting the same basic information. What you're not getting, I mean, in conscious channeling as you are in trance channeling, what you're not getting in conscious channeling is the removal from human experience. And that is preferable to a lot of people. They really like the purity of the raw contact compared to what some people find more helpful, which is, you know, it's a much easier to read, easier to understand material from those of Kuo. If you get a reading from those of Kuo, it's easier to understand. You can talk about it easier. When you pick apart a session from those of Ra, you could spend an hour talking about one paragraph. It's that dense. So that's pretty much my thoughts on that. Mickey, what about you? You've had the same experience as I have.
Well, in general, I think people look at material that comes from a trance channel as probably being more accurate or more precise, since it would not involve so much of the channel's own memories or personal experiences. But I think in each case, as you said, it's important to realize that the one serving as an instrument needs to be careful about the procedure with which he or she engages in the process, and the type of person really that you have there. Have you got a person that's really desirous of being of service to others to the fullest extent possible? Have you got somebody that's really kind of wanting to perform a little bit and wanting to get some recognition and maybe a little power or so forth? You have to really look at the person before you can get any kind of an idea about the quality of information that could come from the person. And as you said, when a person of high quality uses the proper techniques, the tuning of the instrument before the contact and the challenging of the entity channeling through, then you're providing some safeguards for getting information that it is of a higher quality that can be used by other people. But ultimately, what it really comes down to, I think, is that the reader who is exposed to the material needs to make a decision as to whether or not this is helpful to him or her, because not all information has a universal application. Some information that may really be terribly exciting to one person may be sort of ho-hum to another. We're all at various stages in our spiritual journeys, and we don't necessarily travel the journey just like everybody else does. We don't go from point A to B and eventually end up at Z. We might go from M to Q to D to A, who knows. We have various lessons that have already been learned in other lifetimes. We have some that remain for this one. So the person who reads the information is really the one that decides whether or not the information is good, no matter whether it comes from a conscious channel or one that is in trance. So I think each reader is the ultimate arbiter of whether the material is helpful or not.
I think that's such a good point, and I won't tell anybody. I won't share my opinion of other channels, because I've learned that no matter how little I like a certain channel, inevitably I'm going to hear, "Oh, that material helped me so much. You know, I was at a certain point in my life, and that material really spoke to me." And I'm thinking to myself, see, it's a good thing you didn't say anything bad about that person, because then that person might have questioned whether or not he should even have listened to that material. So I won't do it. I won't share in that, because it's all in what you need and how you need to hear it. Maybe three channels are saying the same thing, but maybe one of them speaks in a way that you can, you know, really read, mark, and inwardly digest, as one of the collects in my church says. I always remember that, read, mark, and inwardly digest, because it comes really right around the holiday time. And when you hear that collect, you know that you're going to be digesting a lot of food. But actually, they're trying to tell you to read, mark, and inwardly digest the Bible. But when people read spiritual material, you know, they're looking at it a lot of the way they look at the Bible. They're looking for the universal truths. They're looking for something they can hold on to, truths that are deeper than just, you know, the shallow everyday buzz. And who knows what's going to do it for them. So I think that we have been very lucky here at L&L Research to have material, to produce material through the years that has helped people, and people write all the time and thank us. It's a wonderful thing, but it's not for everybody, is it? You know, and I hope that I will never forget that and never think, oh, well, you know, everybody likes my material. That's not important. What's important is that you do your best and you put it out there honestly, and you just hope that it will help, and sometimes it does. And if it doesn't help somebody, my advice to them is always to move on. There are many, many other good sources out there. And, you know, listen to that voice that speaks to you. It's got some reason there that called you. Something there caught your attention. Okay, go with it. See how far it takes you. And, you know, if it runs out, well, put that down and just start looking again, because for the spiritual seeker, you can count on one thing, and that's for sure. Seek and you shall find. You look hard, and you look with faith, and you look with the intention that you are going to use that material to serve the Creator, to serve others, you know. And you are going to find that you are provided with the material you need every day.
Okay, I have a couple of follow-up questions. On the channel challenging of the spirits, do you do the same process when you're trance-channeling versus conscious channeling? Is the process exactly the same?
Well,
and
no.
Then
it is
different. Okay.
No, fortunately, the first time that Ra contacted me, I was conscious. And I challenged the heck out of that spirit because I did not want to channel somebody named Ra. As far as I could remember, in Egyptian mythology, Ra was not a nice god. Ra was a god of war. You know, Horus, the hawk-headed god. And I didn't think that I wanted to channel somebody named Ra. And they made it clear, you know, we are not that, not to be identified with Egyptian mythology. And when I read that, I thought, oh, good. But I really, you know, was ready to drop that spirit. But they answered the challenge so beautifully. There was no question but they came in the name of Jesus the Christ. And they were laughing and saying, you think that it's only on this planet that you don't have, you know, total dibs on Jesus? You know, Jesus is bigger than just this planet. You know, of course we come in love. You know, the King of Love is everywhere. So I was able to do it once. But when you're trans-channeling, you don't have a shot at anything except preparing yourself. And you prepare yourself, and then you go into trance. And whatever happens after that is beyond your control.
Ra gave us a ritual, the circle, walking the circle of one, that took the place of the challenge that Carla would normally offer if she were conscious. So we used that before every session.
So the first time you encountered Ra, you were conscious, so you were able to make that challenge?
I was,
And then you just slipped into trance without intending to?
Indeed. It surprised the heck out of me. You know, I didn't know what was going on. And all I knew was Don was standing over me and going, I've got to make a book out of this. And what happened? What happened? He wouldn't let me read it, Monica. He would not let me read the sessions for, I suppose, a month. At least.
23 sessions.
Yeah, the first 23 sessions, you'd have to look at the dates on them, but during that time, you know, and the Ross way of speaking, you know, I mean, a person is a mind, body, spirit, and everything's a distortion. And, you know, I mean, it's not what you'd call regular earth speak, right? And so they would be saying, oh, well, does your mind, body, spirit complex have a distortion towards hunger/fullness? And I'm working it out in my mind and see. Are you asking me if we want to go out to eat now? Well, what are you asking me? You know, are you saying, are you hungry? Is that what you're saying?
Also, Don was saying this to you because he knew that language, and you hadn't. This was before you had read it.
I had no idea. They were teasing the heck out of me.
Oh wow!
I was so glad to read that material.
Well, that's kind of a confirmation that you definitely didn't know what was going on, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of more follow-up questions. So you just mentioned the King of Love and that we don't have dibs on Jesus, and you did this challenge, Jesus is Lord. Can you explain what you mean by Jesus is Lord?
Well, I take that from the Bible. Anybody that can't say Jesus is Lord, you know, it's in the Bible somewhere. I'd have to look it up. You have to ask any spirit to meet the challenge. You know, can you say that Jesus is Lord? And if that spirit can't meet it, I don't know. It's in the Bible somewhere. And that's what I always used. But what I was asking was, you know, can you meet the challenge of these vibrations? Can you live with these vibrations? And when you say the word Jesus the Christ, there's no question that there's a certain vibration, and it's unconditional love. So you're basically asking, can you accept unconditional love as your vibration? Can you live there, where I'm trying to live? Because it's all vibration. What you're doing when you're tuning yourself up is you're changing the level of your consciousness. You're changing your vibration. You're moving into a less distorted, a more balanced vibration that's more and more like the original vibration. And the better that you are at that, the higher energy you can carry. And so I was always working to carry higher and higher energy, because I felt that the truths are eternal. But to be able to express them in a way that was helpful to people, that was different from the dogmatic, you know, whether it's Christianity or Judaism or Islam or anything, there's dogma involved, and you must believe this and you must believe that. And here these Confederation members were sources that offered no dogma. That means they offered all is one, you know, love your neighbors. And, you know, I mean, they offered suggestions on how to live and reasons for it, good reasons for it. You know, this is the way the game works on this planet. This is what you need to do in order to graduate from third grade, which I think this school is the third grade in an ongoing school of souls. So as you work more and more to open your heart and live in love, you're working more and more to polarize yourself towards the light. And as you do that, as your first thought is, what can I do for somebody? You know, when you see somebody, your first thought is, how can I help? And, you know, you think of everything with love in your heart, and that just begins to come naturally to you, you know, if you ever get there. you know, you are going to graduate from this density to a density that calls me, and calls us all, I'm sure, a density of love and understanding, where the energy is more refined and the experience is more pleasant. And, you know, this is really rough here. This is like, I don't know, what would you say? It's like boot camp. I mean, you know, this is tough. We do a lot of spiritual push-ups in this density. And you need to, in order to be strong enough to work through some of the situations that life is going to throw us all. I mean, golly Moses, life really throws us a lot of, what was it that they said, every tear, every ache of the heart is precious. Well, I've shed many a tear, and my heart aches for sure. And, you know, there it is. Do I see that as precious? Do I see that as, you know, thank heavens I had those experiences. They've deepened me. They've made me a better person, a stronger person, you know, or have I gotten all bitter? Is my heart all closed? Well, I hope not. I hope I've opened and become sweeter and, you know, not more bitter. But I think that's, those are the great goals that, you know, are, that we have in common if we try to live in the same way as the law of one might suggest. And, you know, it's certainly a way to live, but it's not a dogmatic way. It's not a way that has rules like, you know, thou shalt not this and thou shalt not that. It's more thou shalt, you know. It's a positive suggestion. And nobody's counting. Nobody's judging you. There's so much that's good about this particular philosophy. And it, I think it's just so helpful in giving people ideas on how to get out of the constant round of karma, the constant wheel of incarnation after incarnation after incarnation, and finally to be able to leave that and move to another density, a density that has much more going for it as far as I can tell.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left. Do you want to tackle that negative time-space question? Do you think you have enough time for that?
Why don't we get Jim to tackle it? Because he's got so much more of a terse way of saying things than I do.
Okay, I'm gonna read the question real quickly. This is from Adonai 1. Adonai says, I found myself frightened by the passages describing an Orion entity attempting to put part of Carla's energy into negative time-space after attempting to contact Ra in trance without being in the group setting. What is negative time space, and what would the effects be of being put into it? How does one protect themselves from such a threat? Why does the threat exist, and are all channelers in danger of this?
It's a very, very rare situation. Ross said that in the history of planet Earth, only one entity had been led away into negative time space. And I think very, very few channels ever find themselves in a situation where this would be a possibility. So I think people can relax on that. It's not something that's going to be a part of their lives. What happens, apparently, is that if a group of entities get together in a specific way of being of service to others, specifically channeling, that they are creating what is seen in the spiritual realms, or time-space, they're creating a power, a spiritual power. And as we go further into the densities and get higher and higher, we discover that this power is what we are building, either in the positive service to other sense or in the negative service to self sense. And the negative-oriented entities see power created by channeling groups or any group that want to be of service to others in a very pure and positive way. They see it as a light. They see it as power, and they're attracted to the light. And they want to take the light and use it for themselves, because that's the way of negative polarity, to manipulate and control and use others for your own gain. So if they're unable, and most entities of a negative nature, when they are attempting to gather the light for themselves, they offer temptations to channels, temptations of maybe some money or social recognition or some sort of maybe political power, some way of tempting them away from what they're doing, getting them off the beam, off the track, so that in effect, puts out their light. But if they are not able to tempt them away, this is usually fourth density entities. Usually that's all that's ever necessary to tempt most groups, is a fourth density entity offering these types of temptations. If that's not successful, then occasionally the chief domo, shall we say, of the fifth density is alerted to this fact. And if the power of the group is significant enough, then the fifth density entity will attempt this for himself or herself, and if unsuccessful, will attempt to put out the light. And in this instance with Carla, luring her mind-body-spirit complex away from her body as she was out of the body and being of service to others was an attempt to control her incarnation, control the raw contact, and to get more power for the negatively-oriented entity. Negative time space is apparently a very difficult place for positively oriented entities. As Ross said, negatively oriented entities are adept at operating in this area because it's their field of play. Positively oriented entities in this situation would see nothing but darkness. They would not be aware of other entities about them, but Ra said that they would need to, at some point, incarnate into negative time-space and become a negatively oriented entity and continue the evolutionary process until mid-sixth density, when the negative polarity could be reversed and positive polarity could then be regained. But this would take a great deal of time. However, Ra said, inevitably, it would end well. It just would be a very long path back to the positive polarity from which the entity was lured. And the reason this can happen is, as I said, because there is a positive information of a very pure and helpful nature being produced. The negative entity wants it. The positive entity that is outside of the body, positive entities in general are rather gullible. Negative entities in general are rather clever. So a faulty roadmap, shall we say, is given to the positive entity, and they, in effect, become lost. And the higher self is then faced with the dilemma of either keeping the entity from incarnating, which means the entity doesn't go anywhere until there is, you know, further catalyst and further chance for growth. So eventually the higher self would help the negative entity, or help the positive entity to incarnate into the negative time-space realms. And again, this is, you know, they would have to become students of the negative polarity, and positive entities are not very good students. But I want to reiterate that this is an extremely rare situation. It is not something that you will probably ever hear of again, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Okay, eerily I want to interject.
Enough,
go ahead.
I just wanted to add one thing. Eerily enough, when Don and I first got together, we wrote a book called The Crucifixion of Esmeralda Sweetwater. And in this novel, which we saw as a parable for Earth, the question basically was what would happen to positive, totally positive man and woman if they came down to Earth? What would Earth do to them? And, of course, by the title, you can guess that we were pretty sure that nothing good would happen in the end. But this happened, this started to happen to the woman that came here from elsewhere who was totally good. And, you know, it happened in fiction. And then to have it show up in the channeling, it just felt like it was just a story. But, you know, according to those of Ra who were talking about it, this was actually happening. And so many of the things in that book came true later on. We wrote it in 68, and in 72 in 74 we met Andre Puharich, who was one of the characters in the book, and his house was in the book, and I described it. And when we went to see him, I looked at his house, and I said, Andrea, it's so weird. You know, this is, it's like, it's exactly like it's in the book, but I saw peonies around the driveway in the house in the book. And he said, oh, we had peonies, but we cut them down a couple of years ago. You know, it was very eerie. That was very eerie. You can get that book, by the way.
Okay, I need to interject here, Carla, excuse me, because we have like 1 minute left, and I just want to say to whoever's listening live, we're about to get cut off, but we're going to go ahead and just wrap up this topic. We're probably going to talk just a few more minutes, so you can catch the rest of the show in the archive by going to blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. In about 15 minutes, the show will be archived, and you can listen to the rest of the comments on this topic. So, okay, go ahead, Carla.
That's it.
Okay, well, what I find disconcerting, and I think this is the concern of Adonai asking this question, is it's rather disconcerting to think that a person who thinks they're, you know, doing something good could get thrown off course like that and have to spend literally eons in the negative path. Why would, I mean, it sounds like an awfully cruel punishment for an error in judgment or something.
Well, usually what happens to people is that they get tempted. You know, the ego is such a strong thing. They get tempted some way or another. They get tempted away. They do something, they interject something into the channeling because of ego. You know, somebody wants to have a question answered, and they want to answer the question, and the source doesn't give an answer. So out of their ego, they pretend that they're channeling, and they give the answer from themselves. That temptation, that'll do it, you know, and that's a fourth density temptation. Nothing's going to happen to that person. The light's been put out, the vibration's been lowered without any fifth density entity being alerted. What happened in our case is that we were so determined to do this job as well as ever we could. I mean, all three of us, you know, so very dedicated that, I mean, the usual temptations hadn't worked. And so we gained the interest of a fifth density negative entity who just saw a chance to grab me because I had the thought, I wish I were channeling Ra, because I didn't know the answer to a question. And I wasn't about to channel the answer to it, but I had that, I wish I were channeling Ra, and I started to go into trance. And so the La Tui group that I was channeling at the time realized that this was happening, and they kept channeling through me. And if you read, I don't know when the session is, it's somewhere during the Ra contact because we asked about it. But you can see the things that I'm channeling make no sense, really. But it was, they were just getting words through me so that they had kept the contact. They kept me conscious until the moment passed, and I was okay. But then when we asked the Ra group about it, this was the story that they spun. And you can believe it or not believe it. It doesn't matter. But it's an interesting thought on, you know, how polarity works. You know, why does the negative polarity want so badly to put out the light, either to get the power of a light-filled person and use that for their purposes, or if they can't, you know, tempt that person to their side, then put out the light. Why do they want to do that? You know, it's an interesting path of study for somebody who wants to see, well, how do things actually work? What is polarity? What is service to self? What is service to others? I think that's the thorniest single problem that people face when they're trying to work with the law of one material. Because if all things are one, then service to self is always service to others, and service to others is always service to self. Because you can't help being of service to yourself if you help other people, because you and they are one. And if you do something like murder, well, in the larger sense, you're giving the creator experience. So aren't you actually helping? Aren't you actually serving? You know, and it's a very thorny question, and everybody's got to work it out for himself. There are paradoxes along the way.
Okay. I want to, if you don't mind, I'm going to still persist because I'm thinking, you know, for Adonai's sake that he asked this question. So what I'm hearing you say is that if the channelers are succumbing to the temptation of power and that sort of thing, usually then it pretty much ends there and they just lose polarity. And because I'm sure that happens a lot. You see a lot of channelers out there that, you know, are obviously, you know, maybe have a little bit of an ego trip going on, right? So, I mean, you see that all the time.
And so down goes the, and they start out beautifully, you know, but then, you know, I think what happens, you have to live the life of a channel. Jim was talking earlier about what it takes to be a channel and what kind of a person is the channel. You have to dedicate yourself just as much as a priest does to living the life of a priest. You have to be willing to live the thoughts, the ideas that you're channeling. If you don't live, if you don't walk your talk, you will always get the same thing over and over again. The only way you can proceed, the only way you can turn out new material that, you know, is growing, is to grow. And the only way you grow is to live the life as best you can that you are channeling about. And So I always thought that the last half of my life was like a different incarnation from when Don was here. And, you know, the culmination of Don's and my life was truly the Law of One books when he died. And then I was left with trying to live the Law of One. And who knows how well I'm doing. I don't. I do the best I can. That's all. That's all I can say.
Okay, so the people that are channeling and they give in to temptation and then they lose polarity, that's really not, they're really not in the category of what Adonai is asking about, because you said it was, in your case, you did not succumb to the temptation.
Right.
And that's
there were temptations for all of us, which we did
okay.
not succumb to, yeah.
So Adonai is asking the question, how does one protect themselves from such a threat? And are all channelers in danger of this? So in answer to the question, were you just lucky that Latwe was looking out for you? Or, you know, how could a channeler protect against something like that? It seems to me like, you know, by being dedicated and not giving in to temptation is what created this greater danger.
Yeah.
The channel that's able to leave the body and allow it to be used by another entity is very, very rare. Ra mentioned that Carla had not studied any as to how to undertake this type of channeling. We never knew how she left her body. Normally, in this type of a situation, the one serving as an instrument to contact an entity like Ra would have to be a practiced white magical adept, so that type of an entity then would be able to handle any situation that came its way
right.
while it was out of the body. But in Carla's case, we were all very pure and innocent at that time.
We were like babes in the woods, I swear.
And I guess it was our innocence that really got us through. Ra mentioned that we had a great deal of native power in our group, but we didn't have the conscious ability to utilize it as our negative entity of fifth density did. Ra described that entity as having the skill of the swordsman, whereas we were, you know, we had a lot of potential. Yeah, one day, kid, you're going to make it. But
not next week.
Yeah. So, you know, it was the protection of the three of us that provided, you know, for Carla that got us through, that Ra gave us the walking in the circle of one as a ritual to use. We later developed the banishing ritual to help purify the place of working on a daily basis.
We still do that.
And we still do that. But it is an extremely rare situation, and things just fell together so that the three of us were able, you know, to add up our personalities and abilities and present one chord on a musical instrument with three strings, I guess you'd say, that Ra was able to harmonize with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rare situation, which we are extremely grateful to have been part of, but it's not something that's likely to be repeated very often. So it's not something that people have to worry about. It's just
no, it really isn't, because, I mean, when you go to school as a spiritualist, we don't have any white magical magicians around, as far as I know. We do have a spiritualist church, the Brotherhood of Eternal Truth. I think they may have changed their name. It's in New Albany, and a friend of mine, Hoppy Rockner, is head of it right now. And he's also a very sincere, very positively oriented guy. But there are classes and classes and more classes in how to go into trance, how to work out of the body, how to become skilled at working out of the body, so that you are like waking in a dream, I guess, which, you know, is also an advanced skill. But if you're doing trance channeling, generally you're trained and you have protection. You've got your gatekeeper and you've got this and that. So, you know, you've got people on both sides of the gate of, you know, life and death that or local and elsewhere that are going to be looking out for you. In our case, we were just channeling in a group. It wasn't a raw contact day. I was channeling consciously. And if I hadn't had that temptation and started to go in trance, which I didn't intend to do, it would never have happened. But I think that what you have to look at is the fact that it didn't happen and that it will never happen. I don't think that it's something that is going to happen. It's a scary thing, and I'm not sure that we should have even put it in the book because it, in a way, it dramatizes our situation in a way I wish it didn't, because it makes us look like, oh, we were so good and everything, and you know, we were just bozos doing the very best that we could, and and I think, you know, it might have been wiser for us to have taken a deep breath, step back, and said, okay, now let's learn how you're doing what you're doing so you don't have such a hard time doing it. Because I did. I had a terrible time. I lost 2 or 3 pounds every time I went into trance. And, you know, I went down to like 80 to 85 pounds, and I was right in that area for years, the whole time of the contact.
Well, you bozos did a great job. You managed to pull it off, so
somehow.
We thank you for that. Okay, last quick, just to make sure we're clear on this last point, on his last question or his or her last question, are all channelers in danger of this? So the answer would be no, it's more of an issue with trance channeling. Is that right?
Right.
If it's an issue at all.
And it would have to be a trance channeler that had no idea how to do it. And I just don't see that situation happening. Because if you don't know how to do it, you're not going to do it. I mean, I never heard of anybody, you know, when I said, well, I have no idea how I did it, but I did it. They said, that happened to me, too. Well, it doesn't. It doesn't happen to people. And I think that, you know, it's very possible that Jim and Don and I were all born into this life so that we could come together and work together and get this through. You know, so it goes. The threads of this are so deep, and they go to the very core of our lives. But you know, apparently, what we needed, we got, and I didn't get skill. I just got a total willingness to serve.
Okay, very good. Okay, I guess we're done. Boy, I think we went over. I think we set a record today.
Well, we knew we were going to do it, so.
Well,
I hope it was worth listening that next 15 minutes, guys.
I sure think it was. Okay, thank you so much. So next week is still up in the air.
We might as well plan on it, and I'll give you a whistle if things change.
They usually give a couple weeks notice, so we haven't gotten one yet, so we'll probably be here next week.
Okay, so it looks like we will be here, and you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Reckert and Jim McCarty. Check out llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. Looks like we will be here next week. We're normally here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And there's, you know, with Carla's upcoming surgery, sometime in the next couple of weeks, she may be getting that surgery. But just check bringforth.org, and we'll keep you posted. But as of right now, we will be here next week on March 8th. Thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll see you next week.